Hello, hello, hello. Welcome back to Cannabis Insider, people. If you're a regular here, then you know the drill. But if it's your first time, my name is Pato Little, and I'm joined by the fantastic Nico Rodriguez. And today we're diving into a groundbreaking area that's reshaping the healthcare landscape. And I'm talking about psychedelic therapies and role of real estate in this evolving sector. Right, Nico?
That's right, Pato. We're thrilled to have Cody Chandra with us today, the president of Healing Realty Trust. Cody is leading the charge in expanding access to innovative mental health treatment through strategic real estate investments. So how's that? Quite a combination. Let's get into it.
Let's go.
Oh, what an intro, boys. That was great.
We always try to hype it up a little bit. How are you doing?
I love it. I'm good, man. I am, you know, it's been a busy day over here. I feel like every single day it's something brand new that is coming across my desk, whether it's regulatory, whether it's clinicians, whether it's investors. It's, you know, I kind of remember, like, I felt the same excitement in like 2015, 2016 in cannabis too. It's, you know, it's all happening all over again, just another industry.
You know, quite a combination of sectors there. Let's go part by part. Tell us a little bit about Healing Realty Trust and how you came to start this combination of factors.
So I'm going to take you way back because I think it sets the stage perfectly. So in 2014, started investing into the cannabis space and pretty much every vertical you could possibly imagine, from manufacturing, cultivation, retail, you know, the single state operators, the MSOs, we touched it all. And I remember a company coming across my desk called IIPR, and they wanted to consolidate the cannabis real estate space because obviously a lot of these guys couldn't go and get traditional real estate loans or banking relationships. I was like, huh. A fascinating idea. I'll throw a little bit of money in there. So I invested in that company and watched as, you know, the rest of my positions moved up and down. IIPR was pretty much only the consistent one that continued to go up. And I was always fascinated about, you know, like anytime there's an emerging industry, right? Like you have that growth phase where everybody's rushing to market. Then you have the consolidation, then you have the maturity stage. And, you know, it was amazing that IIPR was really able to grow during every single one of those cycle turns. It was fascinating. You know, we looked last year. I wish that I had put every single dollar that I invested into cannabis into IIPR. I think since 2019, IIPR is up like 170 or 180%. And I think like my next biggest winner is probably GTI. I want to say like 50% in that same time period. So that was really the introduction to like what I've never even heard of a REIT, you know, before that. I didn't even know what that was. Like everything, you know, I'd invested in was emerging technologies and, you know, whether it was crypto, whether it was cannabis, whether it was some, you know, new technologies related to healthcare. So that was my first exposure. In 2019, actually at the Benzinga Cannabis Conference, I got approached by a banker and asked what I knew about psychedelics. And I was like, what are you, a cop? I'm like, I don't know anything about psychedelics. And he was like, no. He's like, I'm not talking about you and your friends sitting around a campfire, you know, stringing a guitar, you know, kumbayaing. He was like, what do you actually know about the medical application of psychedelics? And I didn't even know there was such a thing. So it started just this fascination with the space and followed a very similar trajectory to kind of our investment thesis that we had with cannabis. And we touched everything at my VC fund, Ambria. We touched the drug development companies. We touched the clinic companies. We touched the technologies associated to the space. We touched like CPG companies. We touched it all. There were three things that really provided the catalyst to how this company came. So obviously you heard the IIPR story. That's number one. Number two, I started looking at what the use of proceeds were for a bunch of our portfolio companies in the clinic space. And more than 75% of them were raising capital to get new facilities. And like doctors and operating companies, like they're in the business of treating people, not buying and renovating real estate to use to treat patients in. So that was kind of the big thing. And then sitting down and listening to Rick Doblin from MAPS, he talked about MDMA and how the actual rollout of this was going to take place. And there was a fascinating tidbit. I think it was on the Joe Rogan podcast that he dropped that they estimated 16,000 clinics to be built treat 1.1 million people. And to put that in perspective, like 8 million people in the United States suffer with PTSD in any given year. So really that number is probably closer to 150,000 of these centers. You know, and I just seen there was no access to capital for that. You know, there was a great report that came out in 22 and it showed the investment dollars into the psychedelic space. And I think it was like $2.7 or $2.8 billion had flowed into the space. Only 250 million of that went into the actual clinical infrastructure side. So knew that there was just a giant gap. And then correlating our portfolio companies' performances, the capital that they're raising, and then going to Johnson & Johnson's earnings report and looking at Spravato, the only ketamine product that's, you know, insurance reimbursed today. Like you kept seeing their revenue double year over year. And like, why was the growth so fast? And why was it such a stagnant, slow starter in 2019? There were 80 clinics when that drug launched in the US that were able to offer that. So it was literally a directly correlating factor. You know, the real estate needed to catch up. Like psychiatry offices were just not set up for long duration therapies. That was the issue, right? Like the average psychiatrist visit, I think, is 27 or 28 minutes long. You know, after a Spravato administration, they need to be inside of the clinic for 2 hours. So you're talking about radically changing the existing infrastructure of how, you know, that type of healthcare was really delivered to patients. And here we are, man, put my money where my mouth was, put the first check into the company, participated in every single round so far, put a team of rock stars around me from, you know, high growth guys, real estate guys, clinic operators, and insurance veterans. I mean, it's a little bit of everything, man. I, you know, I'll never be the smartest person in any room, but I'll always be the hardest working. So I always want to be surrounded with good people that know a little bit better than I do, you know?
Absolutely. I love it when our kind of insider episodes start with so much energy and data. And yeah, I think you just encapsulated really well a long journey. And we have a lot of, I mean, our audience is really savvy on cannabis, but for those who are listening or viewing who may not know much about psychedelics and healthcare, can you elaborate a little bit on what behavioral health is and how psychedelics fit into this picture?
Yeah. So specifically, so ketamine right now, Spravato is being used for treatment resistant depression. So depending on your insurance carrier, you're eligible for a Spravato treatment after having tried, again, depending on your insurance, 2, 3, maybe 4 different drugs. If there was no improvement after those drugs have been used, then you're able to go and actually get a Spravato administration. Lykos Therapeutics, that just had the very large capital raise and is going to sit before the FDA, I think August 11th of this year. They're going for comments, I believe, next week now. So it's progressing fast. That's actually for PTSD. And then there are a whole host of indications following major depressive disorder, alcohol use disorder. At this point, you can probably guess an indication, and there is probably an ongoing clinical trial taking place right now. Again, you know, billions of dollars have poured into the industry over the last couple of years. You know, there's historical evidence of almost every culture throughout human history using these things, whether it's coming of age ceremony or, you know, whatever the case may be. So these things have been around for thousands of years, you know, as long as people have. You know, it's just now understanding after decades of propaganda, very similar to what the cannabis industry has been through. You know, the only benefit here is this is very largely medical driven. You know, where people ask me all the time to compare the two industries, and you know, while they're both Schedule One, you know, cannabis, we always kind of knew the medical market was a Trojan horse to the rec market, right? Like there were already, you know, 100 million cannabis users in the United States. I think that that was kind of parlaying into that, where psychedelics, it's almost the exact opposite. The recreational use parlayed into medical trials. You know, and I think that that is really the biggest difference. But, you know, the most important thing is where cannabis consumption lounges aren't really needed. You can go pick it up and take it home. The FDA, you know, and Spravato kind of really laid the groundwork for this. They're always going to need to be done in a brick and mortar. It's never going to be, you know, you go to CVS or Walgreens, drop off your prescription, pick up your MDMA and take it home. It's the actual therapy that's associated with the drug. You know, it's really kind of revolutionary. I don't know if there's another program currently that's available that associates drugs with the actual therapy.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. No, that's such an insightful answer. And also, I mean, with all the healthcare issues that the world is going through nowadays, and all the, I mean, the evidence that is available about the, I don't know, the lack of impact that the current therapies have. So there's a like huge opportunity of growth there. So yeah, thank you for that insightful answer.
And not only the growth side, I mean, like, man, you look at veteran statistics. I mean, depending on where you get it from, 22 to 40 veterans a day are committing suicide. I mean, I think one of the leading causes of death for young males in the United States is suicide. I mean, you know, addiction, overdoses, we need a new standard of care. And I truly believe that this is going to be it over the coming decades.
Very, very interesting, Cody. Thank you so much. I got caught up with something that you said, that you said doctors are in the best. I mean, doctors are after prescribing or finding the best medication or the best delivery method, but they're not in the real estate business. So that's where you come in with the real estate and finding, this is what I'm trying to get at. Do you take care of finding these properties, or the person comes to you with a lease, with a contract agreement? And if you can give us some of the complexity of finding, let's say you go after a house, you make sure it has good bones, you know, it's an up and coming area or whatever, but what is it, the deal, the daily, you know, hustle of finding these special places, healthcare facilities? And are there any markets that are different to others? Some of that.
Yeah, so we can get super, super deep on this. So you guys tell me when to stop. It depends on the doctor themselves. You know, we take a lot of pride in custom tailoring everything we do specifically to the physician that we're working with. So if they own a facility today and they need to unlock capital, you know, for whatever reason, payroll, they want to expand to an additional site, we will do a sale leaseback with them, and we'll take their property on. They sign a lease with us, and then we can give them the cash for the sale of their building. But a lot of the times what we see are, you know, mainly physicians that want to expand their current footprint. So maybe they're operating 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 clinics currently in their community, and they want to open up their 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th. So what we do with a tenant like that is, we actually use data from healingmaps.com. So think of what Weed Maps is for the cannabis industry. Healing Maps is the exact same thing for the psychedelic assisted therapy industry. So if you want to find a physician close to you, go to healingmaps.com, type in ketamine therapy, and it'll show you all the clinics in your area. What I don't think the original goal of that company was to aggregate the data so you could see exactly where there aren't clinics. So one of the things I take a lot of pride in is, like, we talk about underserved communities all the time. And listen, patients are there. They're still suffering from the same indications. Why shouldn't there be clinics in those areas? You shouldn't have to drive, you know, downtown to have to go get this therapy. You don't drive downtown to get dialysis. You don't drive downtown to get proton therapy in many cases. Those are already in your local community in the medical corridor. So what we do is, Like, for example, we have a physician in Western Florida. Like 80% of their patients are VA referrals. You know, they don't do ketamine therapy at the VA location. So they gave us a very simple list. They said, listen, we want to be within 3 miles of the local VA clinic. We want to make sure that the average household there is at least 2.1. So there's two people or more living in the household. And, you know, in their case, they wanted to make sure there was high military families in the area that needed these treatments. So what we're able to do is take the data from healing maps of the existing clinical infrastructure that provide these therapies in their area, overlay that with the VA data of where their infrastructure is, and then overlay all types of public census data, NIH data, number of mental health days per 100,000, all these different layers. We have over 1,000 different data points that we layer in there depending on how specific they want to get. And then once we show that to the tenant, we say, listen, do all these things look right? Get the thumbs up. Then we go start looking for real estate in that area. Mm-hmm. And then we handle all the TIs, all the tenant improvements and everything. So it's literally a turnkey, you know, facility for the doctors. They literally, they sign an agreement with us. We go out, find them a new building, and then they move in a couple months later and start treating people in the community.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Sounds, make it sound so simple, but
yeah, I was gonna say that sounds simple, but yeah,
I'm sorry, I've earned all these gray hairs that I have at 34. I'll tell you that. Yeah,
I have a little doubt about the technology side of that. What role does geospatial technology, for example, play? Or do you have any specific software you use for this?
A little bit of secret sauce. So it's something we developed in-house that aggregates all of those data points from all of the different sources that we gather from. You know, one of the most important things, you know, you talk about making investments over the last couple of years. We were very early investors in Field Trip Health. You know, and that company raised tens of millions of dollars and they ended up going bankrupt. Because they were moving into areas that they did not understand the market dynamics in. You know, very successful launch in Toronto. And as they started to move into the United States, they're going to all the big cities that look good on press releases, right? New York, Chicago, San Diego. The problem was they didn't understand the market in each one of those areas. You know, we did some due diligence, you know, when we kind of started using the technology. In some of those cases where they were opening up clinics, there were 7, 8, 9 other clinics within a 5-mile radius of where they were opening up those facilities. So had they used that data to understand the market landscape a little bit better, they could have moved 10 miles outside of some of those locations where that community had no options. And they would have to drive downtown to get those treatments. So
Please go ahead.
Yeah. So we really wanted to, that was like one of the big focuses is, you know, obviously preserving capital is an extremely important thing. And I don't want to throw a tenant, you know, inside of a market that we don't understand, number one, and number two, that they don't understand. I mean, the goal here is to grow our business together with the doctors. So we're both growing at the same time, putting them in markets where they can be successful immediately. That's a big piece of that, you know?
I wanted to ask you just follow-up questions on that. You talked about market, you talked about projections and growth. I was wondering, what are some of the driving factors behind this growth? I feel that is something we should maybe talk about if you have some comments on that.
Yeah, so listen, the ketamine space is obviously what we can use right now, right? Just because obviously the market is now 5 years developed, it's already starting to reach maturity. So let's look at just the last 36 months. Okay. The number of ketamine clinics in the United States has more than doubled. In 2021, I think that there were just over 1,000 of these centers across the United States. Today, there's 2,700 of them that are offering these therapies, whether it's Spravato or whether it's off-label use of IV and intramuscular. So the clinics are coming everywhere, but in a direct correlation to something that we can measure, again, we can go back to J&J's filings. Luckily, they're a public company and they disclose all this. Spravato is now in a $900 million a year run rate. You know, it'll be $1 billion. It'll be a blockbuster drug for them next year. So, you know, we got to watch specifically how the real estate correlated to that, but the main purpose of why we want to build these centers in some of these secondary and tertiary markets. I'm not focused on Miami. I'm not focused on Houston. I'm not focused on New York. You know, we're mainly interested in those outside markets. Again, mental health is going to define this generation. You know, we talked a little bit about suicide rates and addiction rates and things like that. You know, it feels kind of dirty talking about people as, you know, a number that drives sales growth for mm-hmm. health and wellness and healing. You know, I just want to correlate that until these problems get better and these underlying issues are addressed, whether they're socioeconomic issues or family issues, whatever the case may be, you know, the need for this is going to continue to grow. So just, again, making sure that doctors have the assistance that they need from the real estate side. That's all I want to do. Doctors are great at treating patients. They're great at taking care of, you know, their own. Sometimes the business side just needs a little push here and there, you know, to get to the next mm-hmm. place. I want to reinvent the wheel, just help push it a little bit faster, you know?
No, that's a very important mission. And I think you, you touched the right buttons there. I think this whole problem with mental health, the US and the whole world really needs approaches like yours in order to provide the right solutions. I was just thinking, I mean, staying on this subject a little bit, we just passed a Memorial Day a couple of days ago. And it's always a really like a stark reminder of the mental health challenges faced by veterans. And well, you just described it, suicide and a lot of suffering and a lot of things that really a company can help a lot with. So I wanted to ask you, in what ways do you think the current U.S. healthcare system has shortcomings that are influencing the demand for innovative treatments like the ones you offer at HRT?
I think that the regulatory pathway is very cumbersome. You know, getting a drug through the FDA is hundreds of millions of dollars in years. Unfortunately, new treatments are looked at just as what they are. They're novel. You know, we don't know if they're going to work. You know, if you're sitting from let's look at it from two different lenses, from a VC standpoint, a fundraising standpoint, right? Do you want to bet on something that is already producing revenue and is already in the market? Most people are probably going to say yes. You know, I want to get the proven returns. I'm taking clients' monies. I want to make sure that I'm making them money on their money or else I don't have a job anymore. So, you know, I think that is a big piece of it. And then obviously you have the Mavericks, the guys that are tip of the spear, you know, and want to look at these new therapies. And then I look at the nonprofit side. I've been very lucky over the last 4 years to get to know Top Gun fighter pilot Matthew Wiz Buckley. And he was one of those stories you hear about, in a very, very bad place. You know, relationships with his family, addiction issues, and, you know, could have been a very different conversation we're having had he not had the experience that he did with psychedelic assisted therapy. He had to leave the country. So think a young man that literally fought for his country, was in the armed services, in the National Guard, you know, and literally fought for his homeland, had to leave his homeland to go and get these treatments and experience this. And he started a foundation literally to take other heroes and treat them with these therapies that were suffering, that traditional pharmacy drugs just weren't working. And, you know, one of the most impactful missions, I'm, you know, glad to say he's a shareholder in the company, he's on our advisory board, he's been absolutely fantastic. But you know what his new mission is healing heroes at home. You know, so that's one of his big driving factors, is making sure that there are enough centers here in the United States where these therapies can be delivered through. I mean, I think it's really a perfect combination of multiple factors. There's a lack of infrastructure. There's a lack of therapists. The pay is low for a lot of these people. Drugs that have been on the market for decades in a lot of cases just don't have the efficacy that, you know, were originally promised. So I think it's really a mixture of everything, to be honest with you guys.
Thank you, Cody. You mentioned we are talking about regulations, and came to me that the FDA might soon, rather than sooner or later in August, might approve MDA for trials or move along with MDA. I was wondering if, first, if you think this has some promises, let's say, could yield some promises results in the future. And then, what do you think this could change something? What would change the FDA regulation and MDMA?
Yeah, so MAPS has actually been through 2 phase 3 clinical trials. So their new drug application that was filed with the FDA, this is for approval to hopefully start treating patients, you know, if not the end of this year, early next year. So, you know, this could truly revolutionize, you know, how we are treating PTSD. Again, my concern comes back to the actual physical infrastructure. You know, we talked about the average psychiatrist visit being 27 minutes, right? Spravato needing to be in clinic for 2 hours. MDMA, you're going to need to be inside of a clinic for 6 to 8 hours. So when you talk about the actual requirements needed from a bricks and sticks side, I mean, it is massive. You know, I don't think many people realize what is going to be. I mean, it's going to be an effort, you know, unlike most things we've seen throughout healthcare, you know, from a ramp up perspective. But looking at the good news is that once MDMA is approved, these centers start to be built. Compass Pathways, symbol is CMPS, they're in phase 3 trial with psilocybin right now. All of the same facilities that are going to be built, the room requirements, you know, being able to have a therapist, having room to lay down, walk around, a bathroom inside of the room, like that's going to be able to be used for psilocybin too. So the good news is that the infrastructure isn't single use, right? It's going to be used for all of these different drugs, for all of these different indications that are coming down the pipeline.
Absolutely. I think that's a really interesting take on a market that definitely going to grow, but also I think the impact on healthcare and on people who really needs these therapies is going to be huge too. And also, I mean, we see a growing interest, a growing public interest on these matters. So to wrap up, Cody, I wanted to ask you about the future. If there are any like special or important plans that you want to share with us, that I don't know, that HRT is planning right now for the future, or any other important information for the people that's viewing who maybe want to contact you for business, any notes you want to leave now?
Yeah, so listen, our mission again is to provide access to everybody in the United States to start, and then eventually North America, and then eventually the rest of the world. So whether you're a physician that is looking for help on the real estate side, finding additional locations, finding new locations, unlocking capital, call me, text me, email me. Phone's on 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, unfortunately. So I'm always around. If you are a service provider, let's say you do training, let's say you offer services helping to bring insurance services to physicians that currently aren't using them, that are maybe all cash pay, reach out to me. We're always happy to make connections with some of our tenants and some providers, happy to throw you guys on our deck, our website. You know, I want to, again, we all grow together, right? A rising tide lifts all boats. So, you know, whether you're a partner or whether you're a physician looking for real estate, happy, you know, to connect and help whenever way I can. And, you know, investors of, listen, I'm always buying real estate. So if you want to, you know, do good while doing good, I'm more Absolutely. Than happy to have those conversations as well. And hopefully, you know, in the next 12 to 24 months, be looking at, you know, an IPO in the future. You know, we've seen kind of, again, like we've seen the success of IIPR, right? Like sometimes you don't know who's going to win the race, but you know that the industry is going to continue to grow. So sometimes instead of hoping for those 30, 40, 50X returns, getting something that pays a stable quarterly dividend and you also get some price appreciation along the way is a nice thing. And you don't have to pick on one of the couple hundred companies out there all racing to bring different drugs to the market. They're all going to need to be done in a clinic. So you know, reach wow. out to me.
Amazing, amazing description. In amazing description of what ancillary business is, you know, you have this sort of like branch of the industry that touch upon all the terminals and it's essential. And sometimes we don't even look at it. We focus on, okay, where I'm going to get this stuff, how it's going to be delivered, who's going to prescribe it. Yeah, we think about the supply chain, but sometimes we hardly ever think, or we don't think a lot on where this is going to exist.
The end point of the chain. Yeah, everybody knows, you know, A to Y, but where's the Z where you're actually going to receive these therapies? It's and listen, I was guilty of it too, Matt. Like, I really didn't even think the first 3 years that I was involved in the space. I didn't even consider it and didn't even think of the need. And it wasn't until talking to all these clinicians across the country that we made the decision to start the company.
Thank you so much, Cody, for your insights. I think it was a great episode. I hope we can edit it all and have it all in. Thank you so much again for your time, the opportunity to learn a lot about the industry. Pato, always a pleasure.
Yes. Until next time, Cody, we really appreciate your time here. And again, it was a really insightful conversation.
I appreciate you guys having me. Thank you.
Another fantastic episode of Cannabis Insider. Friends, don't forget to subscribe, click. Today, we had the opportunity to talk to Cody, Chandra. Mm-hmm. Thank you. And see you next time.
Yeah, that was a really, really interesting conversation. For everyone here still listening, do not forget to visit our website, bensinga.com, and also to check on our upcoming events, especially the New Jersey Cannabis Market Spotlight and also the Chicago Cannabis Capital Conference happening on October 8 and 9. So a lot of very, very exciting things coming up. And until our next episode, don't forget to stay knowledgeable, stay green, and catch you next time. Bye-bye. We'll be right back.